All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck tuplets? Are there any? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? Did I say that twice? Where are we at? What's going on? What's happening? Are you okay? Where's your brain at? Oh my God, so many things out of our control. What do you do with that? How do you make that about you? Other than, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do about it. How do we react to this? How do we respond? What do I tweet? Who do I call? Where do I send a check? Do I know any Ukrainians? What to do? How do we handle all the stuff that's going on all the time in the real world, on our phone, in our yard, in our pants? It's all so overwhelming, hard to compartmentalize. It's making me crazy. But you got to get grounded somehow. I don't know, man, with all the shit coming down, just the fortitude to get through it on a day-to-day basis without falling into yourself or just crumpling into some sort of existential abyss within. The existential abyss within. Are you falling or are you repelling? Sam Elliott's on the show today. Sam Elliott. Iconic Sam Elliott. Like, who doesn't know Sam Elliott? It's weird. You look back, I have such strong memories. I think it's primarily that voice, that face. I don't know why he's just sort of ever present, sort of in my mind. I just know him, but I don't. Even when I looked at all the movies, I didn't see that many. I mean, you know him from The Big Lebowski, The New A Star Is Born, Tombstone, lots of other movies where he's, you know, mostly a cowboy or a soldier or a biker. He's in this new series, 1883, which is a spinoff of the show Yellowstone, which I don't watch. But apparently everyone in the world watches it. Maybe not everyone in the world. Everybody in a certain world. Everybody in a certain world of people that enjoy people who wear cowboy hats, which is America. Right, man? So, yeah, I talked to Sam Elliott. And, I don't know where to start. You know, I didn't know where to start. Sometimes I just do weird things. I went back and I watched some old movie he did. I didn't realize that he was in the movie Frogs, which I saw, I think, at a drive-in with my parents in the 70s. And it kind of put the, screwed my brain up, because I remember there's a scene in there where a guy falls into some mud and he's just consumed with leeches. They don't kill him, but that was the first time I got hip to leeches, was from the movie Frogs, if I'm not mistaken. Like, there was just things stuck to him, and I was like, what are those? And my dad said they're leeches. And to this day, the idea of a leech, of a thing, just this slimy-ass half a snail stuck on your skin, sticking his teeth in you and sucking your blood, man, it's a little rough. It's a little rough to me. I mean, how bad could it hurt? But when I'm a kid, you fall in, somebody comes out of the mud just covered in these blood-sucking slime pieces. It's a lot. It was a lot. And metaphorically, you know, take that the next step. The leech friend, sure. Who hasn't had him? How much does that cost you? But he was in Frogs, fine. But then he was in this movie called Lifeguard, and that was probably 1976 or 75, 76. And I had some vague memory of kind of seeing that movie, so I chose to watch that. I mean, I watched some of the new show, 1883. I've seen Lebowski. I've seen Mask. I've seen A Star Is Born. I've seen Tombstone. I feel like I've seen a couple other movies where he's been, him and his mustache. Sam Elliott, man. How about that voice? But I watched Lifeguard, and was one of those, I think it was the tail end of, I think, what you would characterize as the 70s movie, with a sort of, you know, existential anti-hero or underdog or dark ending. This one was sort of a fun in the sun version of the existential. I wouldn't call him an anti-hero, but just certainly someone who is challenged as to what to do with one's life or what a future is or what it means to, you know, be an adult or have a job or that kind of thing. But there's some fairly dicey stuff in there, but it was sort of a kind of mellow, beach-oriented inner darkness. And I just wanted to start there for some reason, and that's where I started, I think, when I talked to Sam. It was great to talk to him. I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I sit across from people in this room and I'm like, holy shit, look at that over there. That's Sam Elliott, man. I do want to say a couple words about Sally Kellerman, who passed away a couple days ago, last week. She played my mother on my show. Some of you may know her from, you know, Back to School, or you might know her from MASH, or you might know her from her music and many other movies and things. But I guess I started working with Sally in, what, 2013 or 14. She appeared on all four seasons of my show as my mother. And she was so beautiful and fun to work with, and just had a great kind of like loose demeanor, and she had liked telling stories. And, you know, over the years, you know, by the time we finally got to the last season of my show, you know, she clearly was having problems, you know, with memory and kind of knowing what was going on and where she was. And it was sad. It was hard. And I didn't really speak to her for years. And I don't know, you know, where she was or how it all panned out. But, you know, my heart goes out to her family and her friends. And I just was you know, I was honored to have the ability to work with her and give her the opportunity that I gave her to do my show, you know, in later in her career, because she was so full of life. And it's brutal. It's been, you know, she was 84. It's no youngster, but still the last month or two, a lot of people have passed, a lot of people that I've talked to. And it's one of the benefits, but also one of the it's heavy, man. It's heavy. There's a weight to it. When I pull these episodes out from behind the paywall in memorial to people, it brings them back to life again. And I like being able to do that, but it's sad when you have to post three in the span of a month or two. But I loved her, loved working with her. It was a great part of my life. Bye, Sally. I'm just trying to fucking exist. I get nervous. I get nervous. It all makes me nervous. What the fuck am I talking about? Interviewing Sam Elliott made me nervous. What are you going to do with Sam Elliott? That guy, that voice sitting across from you? The whole history there? Well, I told you what I did. I watched a movie he made in 1976 thinking that would be some portal in. Kind of was. Sam's new series is 1883. It's streaming now on Paramount Plus. This is me talking to that voice, to that mustache, to that actor, Sam Elliott. And I just started playing with people, really.
Good for you.
You?
No, I'm sorry to say.
You don't play, huh?
No, never did. I went to school with a bunch called the Kingsmen up in Portland.
The folk guys?
I don't know if they're folk guys. They recorded a song called Louie Louie that was
the... Oh, that's the Kingsmen, right?
That was the most famous song in the world. Kinks and Trio.
That's who I'm thinking of, yeah. You can pull that mic in, too, pretty close to you.
Yeah.
You know how to do the voice thing.
Yeah, once.
I tell you, I've looked at pictures of you over the years, and the one thing that remains constant is the mustache size.
But I've cut it off.
For a couple times?
Sure.
Once or twice?
Yeah, fuck, I'm not attached to it.
Are you? You're not attached to it?
No. I have it more often than not.
Don't use it? I have mine
but
now.
For work, I'll cut it for fucking work.
In sure, of course. Yeah. But like, and I've done that as well, but I'm always surprised at my lip.
No, it gets pretty fucking big with that hair on it.
It's weird, man. I always feel like mine's a little small. I'm like, because I spent most of my life without it.
Yeah.
But then I see myself and I'm like, I got it.
Yeah, you got a good stash, too.
I know. I've been working on it. It's been about a decade or two. Yeah. It's been 12, 15 years.
Yeah.
But that was it. I did it in my 40s. You've had it forever.
I've had it for a while. I had mustache when nobody had mustaches.
It was a memorable mustache.
Yeah.
But Portland, so wait, you knew the guys in the Kingsmen?
Went to school with them.
That's a huge hit.
Yeah, it was. It was
like everyone's done that song. That song, like, it seems to have, it's almost eternal.
Yeah.
Everyone does it at one point.
Somebody else recorded it first, and I can't remember them, but the Kingsmen is the one that hit.
Yeah. And they were friends of yours?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I used to sing at dances with them.
Really?
And they'd play backup music. That's what I started to say. If I played a fucking guitar at that time, I might have ended up
a whole other life
going and singing with the Kingsmen.
But you grew up in Portland?
I went up there when I was 15 from California, from Sacramento. I was born in Sacramento.
Ugh, Sacramento.
Yeah. It was good then.
Was it?
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, I guess it was smaller.
More than 44, man.
Yeah. Oh, so there was, it was probably
I was there in the 50s. It was a good place to be in the 50s.
Yeah, I just, my impression of it is from probably the late 80s.
Yeah. No.
And I don't
know. Different world.
Yeah, I mean, everything was a smaller town then, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of knew everybody, and it was probably a bustling state capital.
Get on your bike and fucking go anywhere. And,
on the motorcycle or just a regular bike?
No, my bicycle, man, in those days.
Yeah. It was that small?
Yeah.
I used to
go over the river and fish all the time, Sacramento River. I'd go over and fish for striped bass.
Striped bass? Did you get them?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, fuck. There was a huge striped bass run in the Sacramento River in those days.
Just natural.
Yeah.
Not stocked.
No.
Just go get a bass, bring it home, eat it.
Yep.
Mom would cook it.
Or bury it in the yard, one or two.
Just the hobby of it.
It's a good fertilizer.
But your folks were, oh, is it? I guess
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Fish heads, right?
Yeah, fish, period.
Were you a gardener?
Yeah.
Back then?
My folks were in deep with gardening forever. My dad worked for the Fish and Wildlife Service.
He did?
Yeah.
What'd he do?
He was a predator and rodent control game. Started out in Marfa, Texas.
In Marfa?
Yeah.
That's a hip place now.
It is now.
Wasn't then.
No. In the middle of fucking nowhere, man.
Have you been back there recently?
Nah, 10 years ago I was there.
And were you like, oh, what the hell happened?
It's just a fucking art colony now, man. It's cool. Predator and rodent control.
And what is that?
They fucking poisoned fucking rodents and killed fucking coyotes.
For the city?
For the fucking federal government.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So had a little crew of dudes?
Yeah.
With guns and traps?
Guns and dogs.
Yeah.
And traps and poisons.
Like just anywhere?
They laid waste to them, man. They were basically working for the ranchers and the cattle and the sheep people.
Oh, okay. You know? So it was like the federal government's doing them a favor for the agricultural business.
In theory.
Yeah. So that was his racket the whole time?
Yeah, he got transferred to Sacramento, and then he got transferred to Portland, Oregon.
For the same thing?
I was doing the same thing.
So that's why it's a federal government, so it's not, he can go anywhere.
Yeah.
What was the problem in Portland?
It was just where we were headquartered.
Oh, okay.
He had like, I don't know, six Western states in his jurisdiction at that point.
So he was the main guy.
He was one of the main guys.
Get the guns down to the coyote problem.
Yeah.
And that's where he ended up, Portland. Well, what that city like is, I was just up there. It's a little dark and a little broken right now. But I think
it's pretty fucked up right now.
Oh, man. It's
awful.
Like... Here too, but for some reason in Portland, it's a block-to-block thing. I never get a sense of, never feels like that safe up there. Never that grounded.
Yeah.
It feels a little weird.
You're always a kind of cutting edge up there, you know? You never knew what fire was going to fucking turn.
Yeah, it feels like that, right? And it's like set up weird, and there's a lot of bridges, and you don't know where the center of town is. And, you know, it's,
there's the west side and the east side, and that's it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I like it. But I've always, every time I've been up there, I've always thought there's a creeping darkness underneath that place. I'm not sure what it is.
Stump town, man.
What was it like when you were there?
It was good when I was there.
It was just
fucking beautiful, man. I mean, I was a fucking kid that used to fish in the Sacramento River, and all of a sudden I'm living on the fucking Columbia River and the Willamette River. So
you're fishing in a bigger river?
A bigger river.
But it didn't feel weird and dark yet?
No.
No, that came later.
No.
You still got a place up there?
I got my mom's place still. Got the place I grew up in still.
It's just sitting there?
I stayed in there a month ago. I went up there to shoot the last episode of this show. Not last episode, but my last scene.
1883?
On the coast, yeah. So I stayed at my mom's house.
Do you rent it out usually, or what do you?
No, there's a gal living next door that was there when my folks were there.
Yeah.
She and her husband, and she's still alive at 101.
Yeah.
And she's always kind of kept out looking for it since my mom passed away like 11 years ago.
Okay.
And she and her daughter, you know, just check it out. And
they manage the property?
And their family stays there when they come to town.
Okay. So it's like their guest
I'm
house.
I'm hanging on to it until she passes away, then I'm going to cut it loose.
Really?
Yeah.
Just going to sell it?
Yeah.
You're done?
I'm done.
Yeah. When you stay up there, is it weird?
It's totally weird. It's like a fucking time capsule, man.
Your shit's still there?
Yeah, it's all still there.
Oh, no.
It's incredible.
Like in your room?
Yeah.
What is
it's
up
It's like
there?
The fucking archive, man, for my shit. You know, I hauled all my shit up there to show my mom, and it never left.
Oh, my God. I don't know where any of my shit is, my old shit. Some of it.
Yeah.
But it's pristine. It's on the walls and stuff?
It's all their shit everywhere. Oh. On the shelves, on the walls, under the beds.
What are you going to do with
in
that
the closets?
Stuff? You can throw it away?
You know, I never have figured out what the fuck I'm going to do with that, Mark. I've got a pile here and a pile there.
You know, it starts to lose meaning, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm starting to notice that. Like, there are some days, depending on, you know, how I'm feeling, where I look at all the stuff that I've amassed and I realize, like, someone's just going to have to throw this away.
Yeah.
Why not be me?
George Carlin called it stuff, man.
Sure,
it's just
stuff.
Fucking stuff.
Did you know him?
You know? No.
Oh. Yeah, it's just stuff, but, like, you know, it represents some part of your life. And
for sure.
But after a certain point, when you've lost people, like your mom or friends, you start to realize, like, none of it means nothing.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to, you know, it's going to be someone's job to come throw that shit away.
The weird thing and I include myself in that fucking thing, and I hate being called it, but a celebrity, for lack of a better word for it, it has value.
Right.
Yeah. So the thing is for me, I'm trying to figure out how to cash in on it and get it somewhere where...
Right.
It ought to go.
Right. The
value of it.
The Sam Elliott collection.
I don't give a shit who gets what, but I'm not sure where the money will go.
If you can make some money off of one of them hats.
Yeah, fuck, man. I've made a lot of money off of a couple of my hats.
You have?
Yeah. I think some guy paid $15,000 for the hat that I wore in Tombstone.
Good movie, right?
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Like Did you get asked to do the other movie? The Wyatt Earp movie? Did Costner ask you to do that? Like, were you?
We were shooting simultaneously.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I think that Tombstone is a better movie.
I do too.
And it
had a better script.
Better script.
It didn't have a better cast, I don't think, but it had a better script. Well, maybe it had Val Kilmer.
Oh yeah, as Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good.
He was the best thing in the fucking movie.
Huckleberry.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. Did you like working with that guy?
Yeah. Yeah, I love Val.
Who played, was it Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's good, too.
He's incredible.
You guys are long haulers.
And Paxton, Bill Paxton.
Oh, I talked to him. What a sad
fucking good man.
Such a great guy.
Heartbreaking.
It is, right?
Yeah.
I ended up watching a little bit of 1883.
Yeah.
But what I did watch all of was Lifeguard.
How come?
Because I just remember, like,
because it was only an hour and a half long.
No, it was one of those things where I like to, because I like with you, I know you in my head. You know, you cut a path like throughout people's lives because you show up here and there and your voice and everything else. But I recognize you from everything, so I realized that, like, you know, if I'm gonna go look at some earlier shit, and you're pretty much a similar guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, because there's, like, when I think about actors, like, because it's a sad movie in a way.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, it could have gotten a little more menacing, you know,
it
like.
It could have gotten a little darker.
It's right there, and it doesn't, you know, because I think the director seemed like he wanted to make sort of almost a porn movie as opposed to really explore, you know, the sadness of that guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then also you're in this movie, Frogs, which was like a defining movie when I was a kid, but I didn't remember you in it.
Well, that's a good thing, maybe. You remember Ray Milland?
Kinda. That must have been his last movie.
Adam Rourke.
Yeah. But Milland.
Joan Van Ark.
Was Milland, like, old? He must have been old.
That was one of his last films.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I
like,
felt lucky to get a chance to be on the same set with the guy.
Was he cool?
Yeah, he was cool.
He was all right? Cool. He wasn't a monster?
Guy.
Yeah?
Nah, he was a good guy.
So how did you get...
You know, the funny thing about lifeguard...
Yeah.
I got lifeguard because of frogs, which is, you know, it's kind of a continuum from job to job in some respect.
Yeah.
And that one was one of them. I tried to get a meeting on it. I knew about it. I'd heard about the script.
About lifeguard?
Yeah.
Why? Because it was around? Like people were into it?
Yeah.
The idea of it?
I knew about it because I was living on the beach. And I was at William Morris at the time, and I'd seen the script.
Yeah.
And I was in fucking shape, and I was in the water every day, and I'd been a lifeguard in a swimming pool. My folks were both lifeguards, too.
Really?
Yeah, in El Paso.
Yeah.
So I knew that world.
Uh-huh. The lifeguard world.
I went to this guy, and he just kept telling me, hey, man, they don't want to meet you. They don't want to...
Your agent?
They don't know you.
Yeah.
They don't want to meet you.
Yeah.
So I let it go, and then a couple of weeks after that, after I finally backed off of this guy... I get a call from him and says, hey, they want to meet you on the fucking lifeguard.
Yeah.
I said, really?
Yeah.
Shit. So,
and that was
how
it?
Come? He said, I don't know, man. They just want to meet you. So I went in, and it turned out Dan Petrie was the director. He told me this story about they were fucking didn't know who they were going to use.
Yeah.
And he was in his bathroom brushing his teeth or something one night, and his wife Dorothea called him, and she's in bed watching TV, and she says, hey, Danny, come look at this guy, Adam Rourke.
Yeah.
He's perfect for fucking life for the movie. Yeah.
She's watching frogs?
And Danny's in there.
Yeah.
I know Adam Rourke. He's not right for it. And so he comes in, and he says, that's not Adam Rourke. That's Adam Rourke. And so they sat until the end of the fucking movie and got my name off the credits, found out who my agent was, and called him.
And that was it?
That was it.
Well, I thought the wild thing about that movie to me, it sort of seems to be part of that arc of 70s movies where you're not sort of an anti-hero, but there's sort of an existential sort of sadness to the guy.
Yeah.
But it was like sort of the tail end of that shit.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like Five Easy Pieces.
No.
But it was, but it seemed like that was the next step towards the 80s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you
Kathleen Quinlan's first film.
I know. Was she really a teenager?
Fuck. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it got a little dicey. You know, like, because, you know, when you look at that through the lens of now, and when she goes, like, because there's a moment there where she's
like, going to the tower together?
Well, not that. Yeah. But then after that, she's like, I could get you in trouble. And I'm like, oh, this is going to get weird. Yeah. You know, and then, like, you know, you finally meet the girl from that you... It's an old movie.
Ann Archer.
Ann Archer. Was that, like, her first movie, too?
No, she'd been around. Beautiful Ann Archer.
Wow. Yeah.
Knockout.
That's crazy.
A sweet lady.
So, when you grew up in Texas, though, before Portland? So you're like a Texan?
I was born and raised in Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
My folks were in Texas.
Okay.
For generations, when Sparkses and the Elliots were in Texas.
So you come... you're through Texas.
Yeah.
You're Texan.
Yeah.
Kind of.
At heart.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you like Texas?
Yeah. I mean, there's things about it I like.
Yeah. But
there's things about it I fucking don't like.
Sure. Now it's not getting any.
I don't like the fucking politics there much.
No.
The politicians.
No. There's the little hipster Alamo in Austin and Marfa surrounded by, you know?
Yeah.
But did you ever track your family back? I mean, do you know?
Oh, sure.
Oh, really?
Sure.
So where'd they come from?
They came from Virginia, I believe, in the beginning, and they came out on a fucking horseback. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's like this Oregon Trail thing.
It's like the movie, you know? Series you're
so
in.
So it was really close to me and resonated on a lot of levels. I had a surgeon, a guy named Kenny, a great grandfather was a surgeon. It was at the Battle of San Jacinto with Sam Houston right after the Alamo.
Yeah.
Ended up, when he passed away, when Dr. Kenny passed away, he was the Texas State Surgeon.
Huh.
You know?
That was your line, your blood?
Big deal, man. My mom was a state diving champion in El Paso, or in the state of Texas.
Uh-huh.
She graduated from UTEP.
Uh-huh.
She had seven sisters and two brothers.
Whoa. A lot of cousins.
A lot of cousins.
You know them all?
There are a few still there.
Yeah?
Most of them are gone, but there's a few still there, and I'm in touch with them.
Well, this is like this guy, the guy you play in 1883 is a dark character in a way, right?
Yeah.
The background of it is heartbreaking and horrible.
Yeah. He was a vet from the war, for one thing, back in the day. You know, I mean, I'm sure they didn't call it PTSD, but they, you know,
yeah.
Anybody who fought in a war and lost brothers and killed people.
And that would have been the Civil War, yeah?
Yeah.
And that was a bloody, horrible,
awful war.
So you got to integrate this stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you're older yourself, so, you know, there's a, like, and then his wife and daughter die of
smallpox.
And then.
And he burns his house down.
Like that.
With them inside of it.
Because they're both dead?
Yeah. And he's on his mission to get to Oregon, to get to the beach. He's going to the coast. He's going to go see the ocean. He's been there before, but he's going back.
Is it like a death
march?
He's
taking his wife in his head.
Right.
So she can see the ocean. And that was her dream.
And but you're the guide for this crew that's, you know, settlers.
Yeah, me and Thomas, my brother.
Yeah.
LaMonica Garrett.
Yeah.
He's a black man, and he was in a Buffalo Soldier, so he's in Tim is in the Civil War as well.
Yeah.
He fought for the South.
Yeah.
Tim McGraw, yeah. I fought for the North.
So there's a little tension?
There's a little rub there.
But so when you do something like that, when you're like, because you played a bunch of cowboys,
mm-hmm.
but this backstory is not just backstory. You got to be in it. You're sort of a dark dude.
Yeah.
Do you think about that going into it?
No, not really.
Yeah.
You know, when you get a script like this, this guy Taylor Sheridan that created this thing and created Yellowstone and wrote...
People love that thing,
wrote
man.
Wrote Sicario.
Sicario? You know, he wrote that?
Yeah.
That guy's
a genius.
That movie's crazy.
This guy's a genius. You know?
What a fucking movie.
And he knows about the West, and he's authentic in the telling of the tale.
Uh-huh. So you just trust it.
You just get in it. Just be true. Tell the truth.
It's on the page.
The words are there.
Yeah. But like when you got here, like, so you're in Portland going to college. When did you start doing the acting thing?
I started in grade school, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I did Guys and Dolls in grade school. Just standing on the corner watching all the girls go by.
So you were singing?
It was a musical version.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Isn't that Luck Be a Lady tonight?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it, man.
So you did that in grade school.
Yeah.
And that's where you got the bug? That's where you knew?
I got the bug. I saw a movie called Creature of the Black Lagoon one time in the 50s. I think it came out in 54.
Yeah.
I used to go to the neighborhood theater all the time on Saturdays. And when I saw that, I thought, fuck, man, this is my world.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do.
You want to crawl out of the deep?
I want to crawl out of the deep.
How'd your parents feel about it? How'd the predatory...
My mom supported it. My dad died thinking I was a total fucking idiot. My dad died when he was 54.
Ugh.
And thinking, what the fuck is wrong with this kid?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But he wasn't mad at you.
He was just disappointed.
Nervous, disappointed.
He might as well have been mad because disappointing is bad.
So you had to live with that? Yes, knowing that
I'm still living with it, pal.
Yeah.
I wish he'd have been around to see 1883.
To see you win?
Yeah, to see me succeed.
Yeah. How does that affect you in the long haul?
I don't know. I think about it a lot.
You do?
Yeah.
How did he die?
Heart attack. And I was down in Eugene going to school, and he died in my mom's arm on the living room floor.
Wow.
She was giving him CPR, being a good ex-lifeguard. You know.
Yeah.
He didn't make it.
No, it's rough, man.
Yeah.
It's rough. Carry these curses, I guess, that we get. You know? Yeah. So when did you come down here? When did you study?
I came down here, and I laid out of school the year my dad died. I would have been a junior.
Oh, you quit?
Yeah. I went home, hang with my mom, and I lost my student standing, my 2S standing like that.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the fucking height of Vietnam.
What happened?
I got very fortunate and got into the National Guard. I was going to go. I went and checked out all the recruiters, and I had a stack of shit on the kitchen table. And I remember like it was this morning, my mom coming in, and we're drinking coffee, and she's there sitting there with tears in her eyes looking at this shit and kind of looking like that.
Because you were thinking about joining?
Yeah, I was going to go.
Huh.
I felt like it was my duty.
Really?
I was being called.
But you didn't get drafted, but you thought you were going to go anyways.
Yeah. And Holy my mom said, please don't do this. And
what year was that? 69, 68?
67.
So no one knew that what was really going on at that time.
No.
It was just a call to duty.
Yeah.
Wow. So she talked you out of it?
She talked me into thinking about it, but then unbeknownst to me, this actually was 65, sorry.
Oh, so, okay, real early on, yeah.
My dad had a friend that he worked with, and he had a friend that was a commander of the Air National Guard base there in Portland, out by the airport.
Yeah.
So he said, please go out and talk to this guy.
So
I went and talked to him, and the guy said, you want to join? There's a slot for you.
And that saved your life, probably.
Probably. Saved my fucking head, for sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, fuck, man. I wouldn't have done well with killing people and seeing brothers getting killed.
Oh, my God.
Had I not even gotten killed myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have done well with it. I know I wouldn't have.
Yeah. And then, like, as time went on, as the 60s went on, where did your... Did your mind shift about it? Like, did you get active?
No, but no. I didn't get active about the, you know, I look back further into that and into the busing and all that shit. I wish the fuck I'd have gone down there and
civil rights movement.
Yeah. I wish more than anything today that I would have done that.
Yeah.
That I could have fucking stood.
Yeah.
I could have fucking stood that fucking thing, but I didn't, and I didn't with in the Vietnam thing. And I felt guilty about it.
Yeah.
I felt thankful about it.
Yeah.
That I didn't go.
To Vietnam.
But I didn't demonstrate. I didn't get active.
Right.
Because that turned into a whole other ugly thing that somehow those guys that signed up because they felt a call to duty for God or country or family or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they come home and get spit on and all that shit. That put me off of that side of it.
Yeah.
But I always felt guilty about it. And then I got an opportunity. I did a movie called We Were Soldiers one time.
Yeah, big movie.
Played a guy, that was he served in four different military conflicts. This guy, Sergeant Major Basil Plumley. Yeah. And I got an opportunity to go see the wall.
Oh, yeah.
It was on, I guess it was on the 4th of July.
Uh-huh.
And I went there with Hal Moore, who'd written a book and was the general that Mel played.
Yeah.
And Joe Massengale, who co-wrote the book. And I got out of the car. We were with those guys. Plumley didn't go because he said, I'm not a step hanger. I'm not going.
Yeah.
That's what he referred to as the guy hanging out on the steps.
Right.
And that's what I figured I was going to do, just go sit there in the audience. And I go, I'm moving up to the back of the fucking place. And Massengale says, hey, Sam, come on down here, man. He said, I'm going to go up. He said, no, man, you got to say something. I said, what? What the fuck, man?
Yeah.
So I end up getting up and speaking after everybody else had spoken. And I told this story about the National Guard. And, Vietnam was my war, and here I am with you guys. And I've always felt guilty about the fact that I didn't fucking go, but I got into the National Guard, and I was one of the lucky ones. And then after I got down off of that, and I was pretty emotional about it, and we got done to the talk part of it, and we went over and we're hanging around the wall looking at names and looking for people we knew and stuff.
Did you know a lot of people?
There was a few of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found a couple of them, guys I went to high school with.
Yeah.
And this guy in a wheelchair rolled up to me and said, hey, Elliot, get the fuck over it, man. If I could have gotten the National Guard, I'd have fucking been there, pal. Get over it. And I did.
Huh.
I did.
Wow.
But it took a vet to tell me that, a guy in a wheelchair to tell me
who lived it.
That it was okay.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Got released.
Yeah.
One less thing to beat the shit out of yourself
over. Exactly. And I'm one of those that does that.
Me too, pal.
Yeah.
So you got one less.
Yeah.
Now if you can just work through your dad thing, you'll be all
set.
Yeah,
I'll get over that someday.
Maybe.
And I'm probably over it. I don't know. I just, every once in a while.
It comes up.
I just think, Jesus Christ, I wish you'd have fucking known.
Yeah. Well, it's like my dad's still alive, but he's losing his mind. So, like, whatever he knew, he knows less.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Now it's just breakfast.
Yeah.
If he can get breakfast
he's
in there.
Happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, when did you come to L.A.?
In the 66, I guess.
Must have been amazing here.
Yeah, fucking unbelievable, man. I was doing what I wanted to do. I was finally on my way to pursue that career. I had fucking tunnel vision.
Yeah, so you come down here.
From 54, when that movie came out,
yeah.
I had tunnel vision.
So how do you get, like, I like talking to people about, like, not unlike we were talking about Sacramento.
Yeah.
But Hollywood was a small town.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, just a few studios,
and it was
three networks,
and it was a pretty closed town too. Man, it was tough to bust in.
So, what did you take acting classes, or what'd you do?
I went to a workshop. I went to the film industry workshop at Columbia while I was working as a day laborer.
Where at? Day laborer.
All over. I lived in Glendale. I lived in
right here.
Yeah, yeah. Glendale Boulevard.
Yeah, and you were just taking odd jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go to the workshop. Who teaches?
Nobody would know.
But you just, and that was all you did? You
but
just
it was
went...
something, no, it started before I got here. My aunt started at my mom's house.
Yeah.
Next door, there was a couple lived next door, and they had a daughter who was in California.
Yeah.
Married to a guy that was an assistant director.
Mm.
They came to visit one time.
Yeah.
This guy's name was Phil Parslow.
Yeah.
His wife's name was Julina.
Yeah.
And Phil had just gotten off of a movie called The Professionals that Richard Brooks directed as a Western.
I kind of remember that movie.
It was a great film.
Yeah.
And when they got up there, Julina's mom said, hey, there's this kid next door that thinks he wants to be an actor. Would you go, Phil say hi to him and whatever.
Yeah.
So I went over and bullshitted with him and talked to him. And at the end of this talk we had, he gave me a phone number, thinking he'd never fucking hear from me, I'm sure, little did he fucking know, buddy. I was driven. He was one of the first people I called when I got to LA.
And what did you say?
I ended up going and doing all this labor for him at his place. I poured some cement and painted.
So you got the handyman
painted
gig?
His place, right?
Yeah.
And one day I was up on top of a ladder up above in their hallway, in their entryway, and this little guy comes through the door, guy in a suit, and it looked like Mr. Peepers.
Mm-hmm.
Had a pair of kind of horn-rimmed black glasses on. And nice-looking guy, but he was a little tiny guy.
Yeah.
His name was Bob Thompson, and he was a casting guy at Universal.
No shit.
And Bob embraced me, like, right away, and for whatever fucking reason, and I would go from then on until I quit the labor business. I'd go home, take a shower, get dressed, and go and sit in Bob's office and just watch. Just fucking watch. Everybody that came through the door, listen to him talking on the phone, and then listen to him give me advice.
Uh-huh. So he took you under his wing as sort of an assistant kind of a guy?
No, he just took me. He fancied me.
Oh, yeah. That was that? Yeah.
Yeah. He was married. He is married and had three kids, but he fancied me.
Uh-huh.
So I put up with that part of it, and he never imposed himself upon me, which was a great thing, and we became, like, really close friends.
Just liked looking at you, having you around?
Yeah.
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 Well, that worked out.
And he sent me to an agent.
Yeah.
A guy named Dick Baspin.
Yeah.
Worked at a place called General Artist Corporation. Dick Baspin took me to my first interview to meet a woman named Lillian Gallo over at Fox.
Uh-huh.
I ended up doing an audition for her. Then I did audition for Jack Bauer, who was the head of casting. Then I did the same audition for Dick Zanuck, who was running the studio at that time.
So it was still sort of like they still had studio players around.
They still had them. They had them at Universal, and they had them at Fox.
So you could get a deal to kind of be a studio
hire you
actor.
And they'd put you in their shows.
Right.
The Universal one was a program, a great program, because they use their kids.
Yeah.
My wife, Catherine, was under contract to Universal.
But you didn't know each other then?
No. The deal at Fox was no good. It was all based on nepotism and, you know, it was fucking girlfriends, boyfriends, and family members. So I had to figure out how to make it work for me. But
so that's the deal you got, the Fox deal?
Yeah.
So you had to fight it out?
Bob said, you don't want to be here at the studio. He didn't want me to.
Yeah.
That was his advice. You don't want to be here under contract.
So what happened there? Did you get
Fox?
Some work?
Yeah. Yeah, I ended up meeting these two gals that worked in the administration building that were in the legal department.
Yeah.
And befriended them. And,
yeah.
You know, we became good friends. And I found out, like, one of my first encounters with the two of them.
Yeah.
That all of the fucking scripts first go to the legal department.
Yeah.
And they let me come in and look at scripts. And they were doing a half a dozen shows at the time.
TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just looked for the scripts, and I just fucking looked for all the day parts, you know, or two or three lines here and there.
Yeah.
And then I'd go downstairs to the casting guys and leave them a note and say, when this episode, and give them the name and the number of the episode, when it comes up, I'd like to come in and read for the fucking part.
And it worked?
And it worked. I got work doing that.
So you're working on those old TV shows?
Yeah. And Felony Squad was my first show. I
Felony
worked on a show
Squad.
Called Land of the Giants.
Yeah.
Did a couple of episodes of Lancer.
Yeah. And, who's Lancer? Who's that guy?
James Stacy.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. That was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's the guy that got in the motorcycle accident.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Good guy?
Yeah, good guy.
So then you're learning on the job.
Yeah.
So basically, you're showing up, you got how you look, but now you're seeing how the whole fucking thing works.
Yeah.
And figuring it out.
Yeah.
Learning how to,
and I was embraced by there was a family, the Newman family, and I went with Melissa for like 10 years, long time, pal.
Who's that? What Newman
Melissa,
family?
She was Mark's daughter.
Mark Newman?
But then Mark was an agent, and all of his brothers, except for one of them, two of them.
Yeah.
One was also, I think, an agent, maybe, but one of them, Irving, was a doctor.
Uh-huh.
They were the Newmans of the music world.
Uh-huh.
And, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And
that was a look at the inside of the business that no one should have ever happened.
Like, what was it?
You know, I mean, you know Randy Newman, yeah?
Yeah, of course. And his father was a composer.
His father was a doctor.
And then the uncle was the composer.
Yeah.
And you dated his sister? Is that what you're saying?
No, I dated his cousin.
Oh, his cousin. Yeah.
And now today it's Tommy and David that are both composers. Great composers for Spielberg and those guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
they were that big when I met them.
I've interviewed Randy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
He's a fucking great guy.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's a very funny.
Yeah, he's a very funny
self-deprecating guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you were able to see.
I was in the middle of it.
Oh, my God.
You know, just the greatest gift that I could have had, you know. Melissa's dad, Mark, one time referred to me to her, "What are you doing with that farmer?" I'd come down from Oregon, so he figured I must have been a farmer.
Wow,
man.
Talk
funny, so.
And then you're still doing all the TV? You're doing like Mission Impossible and shit?
Yeah, I went from the Fox contract to a year on Mission Impossible, and then I started doing those long-form television things. Yeah.
So, but what was the first movie?
That I acted in?
Yeah.
Or the first movie that I worked on was Butch Cassidy. I had one line off camera.
Yeah.
I'll take two. I was in a card game in the beginning of the film.
That must have been exciting.
And I was a shadow on the wall, man.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
Yeah.
My name's in the credits. I think it's next to the last name, you know, card player number two.
Yeah. Was it exciting, though, being on the set?
Sure.
I mean,
kidding? Newman and Redford were in the scene.
Wow.
Redford was playing cards, and Newman came in afterwards.
I remember this
halfway
scene.
Halfway through the fucking, you know.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Big deal.
Did you see, like, were you, like, I mean, There's all these tricks. So I've acted a bit, you know, not a lot, but I'm doing it more. And I talk to guys like you, and I talk to like someone like Jeff Daniels. I talked to, and he was
brilliant,
right? But he was the guy who's like, you got it. It's your face, man. You have to understand your face, because he's like, all of movie acting is your face,
right?
But like, how do you learn that? Did you learn that?
I think it's time.
Yeah,
I think if you have time. Jeff and I have had, then you start to figure it out.
But it's true. It's so true.
It is true. That's all it is.
And you don't even have to.
And in the Western, it's a fucking hat. That's part of it.
The hat and the face?
Yeah.
I talked to Andy Garcia, and he mentioned something that I didn't follow up on, but he talked about somebody that Costner had taught him the trick with the matchbook to keep your hat on. What does that mean? Like sticking a matchbook up there so when you're riding.
If it was, they have a. There's a leather piece inside. And if the hat's like loose on you, you stick the matchbook in. I've never heard that before, but I've stuffed my liner
stuff
the
up
hat
there?
Before. I had a hat on this fucking show. I've got a friend of mine that just a couple of weeks ago, passed away.
A guy named
Lester Bayless, who started a costume company called United American Costume. And Lester's take on the whole fucking thing with Westerns.
Yeah.
He did John Wayne films forever.
Yeah.
It all starts with the hat.
Yeah.
And it does.
Really?
Because of what you were talking about
the face. Yeah.
In a Western, a hat is part of that.
And how?
And we didn't get the fucking hat till we got down there. We down there in Texas, and it was a mistake because we got pushed into a box where we had to settle for a hat, and it was a fucking hat that didn't fit me.
Which one? Which movie are we talking?
This one.
Oh, yeah, 1883. Yeah.
The fucking hat was too loose on me, and it was a hat that just didn't fit.
You're Sam Elliott, goddammit. Where's the fucking right hat?
I know, man.
And what hat?
And Taylor, I remember talking to Taylor on the phone. We'll try a million hats on if we have to. You'll have the right hat. Don't worry about it.
Oh, good.
And
good.
I got down there and it didn't. Didn't happen.
You didn't get the right hat?
Mm-mm.
God damn it. Now I got to look at that thing when I watch it and know that Sam wasn't happy with his hat.
Yeah, that's what happens, you know. But I made it work. I just got into it and figured, Shay's got a fucked up hat. That's all.
What was wrong with this hat, man?
Didn't stay on.
Oh, it's
that
just
was
a
the
fit.
Biggest part of it.
But you didn't mind the way it looked?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah,
it was all right.
So
not my favorite hat.
It's interesting to me because ultimately, like your career really picked up like midway through, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean you've been you never stop working, whether it's TV or movies, but would you say that Mask was the first big one? Really? No?
Yeah. Probably.
Because I remember that was a huge movie.
Probably.
And you're like sort of this, you and Cher, you're the kind you're the brick, you're the rock in a way.
Yep.
And that, do you feel like that put you on the map in a way? Because we did a lot of TV, I guess.
Yeah, there's a few along the way, and that might be the first one.
But you could have been stuck on TV for the rest of your life, really, right? You might not have ever done movies.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fucking trap
that
a lot of people fell into.
Yeah.
I mean,
they make a good living, but if you want to do movies, you do movies.
If you're working for money, that's one thing, but I wouldn't ever... Money isn't what motivates me today. It's what's on the fucking page that motivates me.
Yeah.
And the people that I'm working with.
And
I was doing a television show.
Yeah, which one?
Called The Yellow Rose. It was a deal with, and Sybil Shepherd was on it.
Oh, yeah.
And she was going with Peter Bogdanovich at that time.
Right.
We're sitting in a makeup trailer one day, and she says, Peter's doing this movie with Cher, and he's looking for Gary Cooper on a motorcycle. And I told him about you, and I said, what?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, cool. So I leave and go to Hawaii to get married with Catherine.
Now, Catherine Ross, she's amazing, and you were on the set of Butch and Sundance with her, but you never met her, or you did?
No, never met her. I was an extra, man.
But did you see her?
Yeah, sure. I watched her shoot a couple of scenes, and I saw her every day going into the commissary, and just thought,
Was that where it started?
Well, no, it started probably She did a movie with James Stewart fucking eons ago, and she had hair down her butt and a fucking braid about that big.
Yeah.
And those fucking eyes and that beautiful face. And I just thought, who in the fuck is this? And that's where it started.
Yeah. Before thing, it was before Butch and Sundance?
Oh, yeah. Before The Graduate. Before everything.
You just were in love with her.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. And I get a call from my agent, Ron Meyer, in Hawaii.
Yeah.
That Peter Bogdanovich wants to meet me for Mask.
Yeah.
I said, fuck, man, I'm on my fucking honeymoon. I'm not fucking coming home for a meeting.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you got to come. You got to come. This thing's a great script and share and blah, blah. And I said, Ronnie, what the fuck, man? I just got married.
Yeah.
So I go back to Holly, we're staying in, and tell Catherine about it. And she said, well, do whatever.
She didn't say one way or the other.
Unbeknownst to me, she sneaks up to the fucking phone and calls Ron Meyer and says, he'll fucking be there. Set the fucking meeting. And we flew out the day later.
Lucky to be married to an actress in that moment.
That's it.
And then you got that movie.
Yeah.
So, Catherine Rosso, you're in love with her forever, but you didn't know if she'd be in love with you. How'd you make that happen?
I don't know. I'm not sure she is anymore, actually. After being away for 5 months on this show, man.
Yeah.
It wore thin.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard. It's up and down.
Yeah, of course.
Marriage is up and down and hard work.
Yeah. And you got kids?
Got a daughter, Cleo.
Okay. Yeah,
37.
Wow.
Yeah.
Older kid.
This is a good one, though. She's maybe older chronologically, but she's a baby still. Always be my baby.
Well, that's sweet. It's hard being an actor. I mean, doing that. I can't, like this one, 5-6 months on a fucking show or a movie. Yeah,
that's the longest time I've ever been away from home.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it awful or was it all right?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean,
did you have a nice trailer?
Yeah, it was like a bunch of fucking gypsies, man.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't hang out in a trailer.
You can't, right?
I go there in the morning, get dressed, and go back in the evening, get undressed, and go home.
I always sit on set and hang around.
Yeah.
Drink coffee, sit in
the
chair.
The movie is on set.
Sure. You got the chair with your name on it.
The movie and where the people are.
Yeah, right. You can't sit in those fucking trailers. Yeah. Lose your mind.
Yeah.
And there's always like that horrible fake leather on the chairs. you don't even want to sit in them.
Right.
There's nothing, like, they can't make a trailer without uncomfortable fucking place to lay down.
This place was comfortable. It was a good one.
Oh, you got a good one?
It was a good one.
Well, I would hope. Yeah. 5 months, Jesus.
Yeah.
So, like, let's talk about the Lebowski thing, can we, for a minute?
Sure.
I have to assume that you have a lot of insane fans because of the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
And they want answers. What? You do, right? People love that movie, man.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Oh, I didn't think I was lucky to be there.
Yeah.
You shit me? Number one, Jeff and I are contemporaries almost.
Yeah.
He started fucking 10 years before I did, I think.
Yeah, he's great. You guys. Same generation.
Jeff is the dude, for sure. Right?
He's the dude, yes. Yeah.
And then with, the Coen brothers, I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah. You know? Did they just call you? Because it seems like you were that guy.
They reached out to me, yeah.
They're like, it feels like they wrote it for you.
By then, I was in kind of the box, I've always felt like I've kind of got boxed in because of these Westerns that I've done.
Right.
Like, people just figure that's all I can do. And,
yeah.
For a time, I fucking thought, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Man, maybe I ought to stop doing these, so I can try to do something else, but then I embraced it, and it's like, but
what would you have
Big Lebowski was incredible. I was only there 2 days.
Right. It's such a funny
part.
And
I never got out of the fucking bowling alley.
Such a funny part, though.
We did the voiceovers in the trailer.
That's right. You narrate the whole thing, don't you? Yeah.
And I thought we were like doing the voiceovers like for a temp track or something. And they said, "Oh no, man! They had a deck about that big, and that was it." And I said, "Oh no, this is it." And it was it.
So when you say, accepting the fact that you're just going to be this Western guy, like, what did you picture yourself doing? Like, what other kind of roles would you rather be doing?
Fuck anything. Yeah.
Anything where you didn't have to pick a hat?
No, anything good.
Yeah.
Anything good.
But you did other stuff.
Yeah, I did.
You know, I mean,
well, I played a lot of military guys, you know, and I played a few bikers, Roadhouse and Mask, you know, and bikers and cowboys share some sort of same sensibility, you know.
You're like, but there's something dug in, man. There's like, you know, Sam Elliott's the it's a cowboy thing. It's an American thing. It's you're a known thing, right?
The known thing.
Yeah. That's what
people probably know more about me than I'd like, you know.
Do they?
Thanks to that shit.
What, the internet?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think's out there?
I don't know. I don't want to know.
Oh, you
don't do any of it.
Oh, you did the Hulk. You did all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
The Star is Born thing. Like I found something kind of like I can't get over the fact that at that point where you tell, you know, Bradley that, you know, you stole my personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize in that moment that he had sort of done your voice the entire movie. That's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you guys work together on that shit?
I'd never known Bradley other than watching him.
Yeah.
And I remember, I'd not seen all of his work.
Sure.
But I remember having kind of this preconceived thought that he'd done some really silly shit.
Uh-huh.
Which I've seen since and now see that there was a lot more to it than I had given him credit for.
Uh-huh.
But I went and met Bradley, and he was over there in the Palisades at the time, and I'd had word that he was interested in me for this part.
Yeah.
I was doing The Ranch at the time, a television series.
Yeah. Oh, people like that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I go over and I meet with Bradley and we go inside and he's the most gracious fucking human being I think I've ever been around. Just fucking the nicest man.
Yeah.
I go in and we sit down and we're going to have dinner. We're just shooting this shit, talking about our moms and talking about the script.
Yeah.
He says, I want to play something for you. You're going to think it's really weird, but I want you to listen to this. And he goes over this sound system he's got and he turns it on and it's him doing my voice. He's been working with a voice coach long before I met him.
No shit.
And he's saying this shit and it sounds very much like me.
Yeah.
And the shit and he turns it off and I said, yeah, you're right, man, that is fucking weird.
yeah.
And then he told me about, you know, his idea about the brothers and, you know, the Star is Born, that was the fourth version of it.
Yeah.
There was never a brother before. That was all Bradley's and the other writer's concoction and, you know.
I thought it was the best turn in the movie.
I think it was the best Star is Born that's been made.
Sure.
For my minute, and I don't say that because I was in it. I just thought
But
between he and Gaga and everybody else that was around for that matter, just they had a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah, but that's so interesting to me that he this was before you got the part. He brought you over.
Yep.
He cornered you.
Yep. No, he knew I was gonna fucking do it, I think, before I even got a call to go do it.
He did? Why would
The last thing he told me, he said, hey, man, just trust me.
Yeah.
You just trust me. You'll be glad you did it.
It was such a tragic.
And he was right.
Yeah, it was great.
He was right.
It was so tragic. It was such a tragic, sort of component of that character.
Yeah.
That he had no sense of self.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, it was genius. Bradley
is a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck? He's a brilliant director.
Yeah.
Worked that screenplay over.
What makes a brilliant director? Have you worked with a lot of them?
No, fuck. I mean, somebody that just... the director is the captain of the ship.
Man. Sure, man. Yeah.
And if you feel like he has some vision as to where in the fuck he wants to take the ship, you know, we're just people in a crew.
Yeah.
And my job has always been to give the director what he wants.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And if you get in there with some guy that doesn't know what he fucking wants, then you're just fucking on your own.
That's a long day, right?
That was Bradley.
Yeah.
First scene we had together when we're fucking at odds, where he comes in and cold cocks me in front of all those people.
Mm.
I fucking went out there, and I was nervous anyway because, you know, I still get nervous and working in a big film with he and Gaga. We went out way on the other side of the fucking town, some racetrack somewhere. And I'm thinking, fuck, we're just going to kind of be off to the side doing this scene. And we walked into an area that's about from here to that outside wall, square.
Yeah.
And there are fucking solid people, three deep, all the way around it. And that's where we played that fucking scene.
Yeah.
And I was fucking really uptight about it. And Brandon kept knocking me down, and I'd get up, and fuck, I was, like, really emotional for it in the beginning. I was, like, fucking crying and shit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, really fucking out there, and Bradley just come down to me, get in my face, and he said, hey, man, fuck, yeah. Get up and fucking be pissed, and get up on my, you know, so
yeah.
We're getting in close, and even a couple of minutes later, he said, put your hands on me, and so that's when it got really fucking good, you know.
Yeah.
That's what a good director is.
So, and he's,
he sees something. He sees what he wants.
Yeah, and he has
the ability to communicate it to the actor.
And he's the actor, too. That helps.
And he's acting at the same fucking time.
Wow, man.
And singing.
Yeah.
And no pre-recorded, nothing. Everything was live. Everything, every song they sang in that movie was live.
He went all in, and it paid off.
He and Gaga both went all in.
Yeah, Gaga's great.
Fuck, she's brilliant.
I even like that Gucci movie. No one seems to like it that much.
I wasn't too keen on it either.
Yeah. You didn't like it? I liked it.
Yeah, I don't know. I love her.
Yeah, she's great.
I love her.
Did you see Power of the Dog? Did you watch that movie?
Yeah, you want to talk about that piece of shit?
Oh, no. You didn't like that one?
Fuck, no.
Okay, why?
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I didn't like it anyway.
Yeah.
I looked at it when I was down there in Texas in 1883.
Yeah.
And what really brought it home to me the other day, where I said, do you want to fucking talk about
it? Yeah, yeah.
There was a fucking full-page ad out in the L.A. Times, and there was a review, not a review, but a clip.
Blurb?
A clip, yeah.
Yeah.
And it talked about the evisceration of the American myth.
Huh.
And I thought, what the fuck? What the fuck?
What does that mean?
This is the guy that's done Westerns forever.
For his whole life.
The evisceration of the American West. I mean, they made it look like, what are all those dancers, those guys in New York that wear bow ties and not much else?
Uh-huh.
Remember them from back in the day?
Oh, the Chippendales?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what all these fucking cowboys in that movie look like.
Uh-huh.
They're all running around in chaps and no shirts. There's all these allusions to homosexuality throughout the fucking movie.
Yeah. I think that's what the movie's about.
Yeah. Well, what the fuck does this woman from...
Who, Jane Campion?
Yeah. She's a brilliant director, by the way. I love her work.
Right.
Previous work.
Sure.
But what the fuck does this woman from down there come...
Oh, New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Right.
...know about the American West? And why in the fuck does she shoot this movie in New Zealand and call it Montana?
It's good. This movie...
And say, this is the way it was.
It's got you, this movie.
So that fucking rubbed me the wrong way, pal.
Yeah.
And the myth is that they were these, you know, macho men out there with the cattle.
Yeah.
I'd just come from fucking Texas where I was hanging out with families, not men, but families.
Yeah.
Big, long, extended, multiple generation families that made their living, and their lives were all about being cowboys. And boy, when I fucking saw that, I thought, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Where are we in this world today?
Well, I don't know that that's the biggest issue at hand.
It's not the biggest issue at hand, no, but it's for me, it was the only issue.
Right, but you
because
can't...
Because there was so much of it.
Do you...
I mean, Cumberbatch never got out of his fucking chaps. He had two pair of chaps, a woolly pair and a leather pair.
Yeah.
And every fucking time he'd walk in from somewhere, I don't know where in the fuck, he never was on a horse.
Yeah.
Maybe once.
Yeah.
He'd walk into the fucking house, storm up the fucking stairs, go lay on his bed in his chaps and play his banjo. And it's like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know,
but
where's the Western? Where's the Western in this Western?
I get what you're saying, but you can't. But there's no part of you that knowing art films and knowing a separation that this is a specific story and that, you know, the idea that it's an evisceration of the American West was a critic saying
something.
No,
the American myth.
The American myth. Yeah. Well, you're part of it, so I guess it's a personal insult.
I took it personal.
Yeah.
I took it fucking personal, pal. Yeah.
What is your favorite Western?
Yeah, I don't have one.
Oh, you don't?
No.
You like watching them?
Searchers.
Yeah.
Searchers. All those early ones.
Yeah.
Not all of them. I mean, I wasn't a huge John Wayne fan.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I like the Searchers.
Gary Cooper was my guy.
High Noon?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. I just.
Lee Marvin.
What was that one they were both in? Where Lee Marvin plays the wild man and Jimmy Stewart plays the senator?
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. I just watched that. But you know what one I watch a lot? Is The Unforgiven.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, that guy can make a movie.
Yeah. Do you know him?
No, I've met him.
You never worked with him?
Never hired me.
God damn it.
Yeah, no shit. That's what I always thought. What the fuck, Clint? Come on, man.
So when all this time, though, were you... Like, all this time you've been out here, like, do you remember, like, in the 60s and 70s, like, was it fun to be in Hollywood?
Sure. Sure. But that's something else I missed. It was like the busing and all the, you know, all that shit in Vietnam. I missed that, too. I should have been hanging out in Laurel Canyon.
You weren't.
I probably never would have. I'd probably done as well there as I would have done in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I probably... I've probably been buried up there somewhere.
Yeah.
But I saw Joni Mitchell driving over Laurel Canyon, and that'd have been it. You know?
You weren't part of that trip?
No.
What was your scene?
Hmm?
What was your scene back then?
I just was in deep working, man.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah.
And then you met, you and Catherine got it together when?
1978. A terrible gothic horror movie called The Legacy. Wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great.
That's where you met her again, and that's where.
Well, I never met her on Butch Cassidy. I never met before.
But
her there.
Was it part of the agenda to meet her? Like, did you get that movie because she was in it?
Nah, I don't think so.
Oh,
it was an opportunity. It got me out of the country.
Yeah,
it was just an opportunity.
Yeah, but you didn't know she was in it.
Oh, yeah, I knew she was going to be in it.
Oh, yeah. Finally. You finally got to hang out. Well, congratulations for doing all the stuff.
Thank you. Thank
you. Man. It was great.
Thank you, brother.
It's great to see you. It's great to talk to you.
Likewise.
It's great to hear the stories. And this show looks great. I mean, it looks great, and it's an interesting character.
It is a good one.
Well, yeah, and like the other one this is hugely successful. And do you have a big fan base from? Yeah, you don't know yet, really, from this one.
Well, I know. Yeah, this thing when it went on the air, the first episode, was the highest rated thing in fucking I don't know how long.
Blew up
10 years or some shit. You know?
Yeah.
It's insane, and it is connected to it in that
it's a backstory, right?
It's a prequel,
right?
But
yeah,
I'm not a Yellowstone fan. I don't watch Yellowstone. To me, I love Costner. There's a lot of good people on the cast. A few of them I've worked with before.
Yeah.
Nothing against any of them, but it's just too much like fucking Dallas or something for
me.
Well,
it seems to be the model, right?
Too much shit.
Yeah, too soap operatic.
Too much of that for me.
What do you watch? What do you like?
I don't watch much.
No?
Hmm.
You read? You sit?
Yeah, I work in the yard a lot.
Yeah? Growing shit?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good talking to you, man.
Likewise.
Sam Elliott, the new show is 1883, now streaming on Paramount Plus. I'm going to play this guitar now, and I'll talk to you in a little while. I did record this a couple of days ago, so if anything horrendous has happened, any more horrible things, I must have missed it. We'll be right back. lives Monkey and La Fonda and Cat Angels everywhere. Thank you.